Hey everybody, welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I am giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I'm welcoming author JT Geisinger. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
JT Geisinger is a New York Times, USA Today, and Publishers Weekly bestselling author of 35 novels and novellas. She's a three-time finalist in both contemporary and paranormal romance for the Rita Award, the highest distinction in romance fiction from the Romance Writers of America. She's also the recipient of the Prism Award for the Best First Book, the Golden Quill Award for Best Paranormal Urban Fantasy, and the Holt Medallion for Best Erotic Romance. So before we talk Blackthorn, your newest release, let's get to know you. So Okay. Why romance?
Oh gosh, I guess that's a good question. I think I was initially, I always wanted to be a writer, but what really got me wanting to write my first book was Twilight. I was a big Twilight fan when that came out, and I had read an interview with the author, Stephenie Meyer, where she said that she didn't have any experience in writing, and she was a stay-at-home mom, and she just woke up from a dream that she had one night, and she started writing this book about this vampire romance. And, you know, eventually it went on to sell something like 140 or 50 million copies. Yeah. And I was very inspired by that. And I thought, you know, well, if she can do it, I can do it. And so I started writing a book. And I guess it's because I'm just a romantic at heart. I always want to have a love story in my stories. So, yeah.
So your first novel like that you wrote, how challenging was that for you to put pen to paper or fingers to computer even?
The first book was the most challenging because I didn't trust myself. And as a artist or as a writer, there are a lot of moments where you just have to allow yourself to work through the imposter syndrome and the fear and the worry about criticisms and all of that stuff. So it's kind of hard to do that. But technically, I think I had read so many books. I'm an avid reader and always had been. So I felt confident enough that I knew how to put a story together, the three-act structures and how to, you know, aim towards a climax and then the denouement and all that. So I felt confident with actually writing a book, but it was more like the mental and emotional aspect. So it took me almost a year to write that first novel. And then when I did, I finally went out and I got an agent and she sold it to a publisher. So it was kind of gratifying in that way that my first effort actually was at least commercially viable. Yeah. I know there are a lot of authors who, you know, they write 5 or 10 manuscripts before they find something that they can sell. So, but you know, I still have to talk myself off a ledge quite often. Halfway in the middle of the book, I'm like, this is terrible. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, so those kind of things never go away, but I have learned how to trust myself more.
Is there a piece of advice that present author you would give past author you?
Yeah, like don't sweat it so much. Don't worry so much about it. Just keep writing the book. And then at the end, if you don't like something, once it's all out, you can go back and change it. But I have a tendency to get too up in my head as I'm writing it instead of just letting it flow. So yeah, I would tell my past self, just don't worry about it. It's all going to work out.
So when you're actually writing, do you plot out your books and your series from start to finish or do you pants?
I'm a total panster. The only book that I really knew how it was going to end was Pen Pal, because I had to know the ending of that in order to, because it was more of a mystery. So in order to plant all those little clues, I had to know where I was going.
Right.
Most books, I just start with two characters and a conflict, and I get to know the characters and the whole story is very character driven. So the only time I ever tried to plot a book and outline it in advance, I ended up writing like 10,000 words of an outline and I hated the process so much that I never wrote the book. So I don't do that anymore.
Do you think you'll ever go back to that story?
No, I don't think so. I think it just killed it for me. It killed the surprise and the joy. And I like to be surprised by what's going to happen. And so for me, it's part of the creative process is just allowing these surprises to come along and allowing myself to go kind of nutty because my mind goes in all kinds of weird directions and just allowing it without censoring myself. That's when all the magic happens.
So your stories, like there's multiple layers of relationships and types of relationships throughout the books. Like how do you find the balance between the relationships between the hero, the heroine, like the sub, like the secondary characters with the story itself.
I'm not really sure. Technically, I think because I'm focusing on the characters a lot, the plot for me grows out of what is genuinely the thing that this character is going to do. And I do like to have a pretty quick pace, so that will always add to, okay, there needs to be an action element here, or there needs to be some kind of a twist to keep carrying the reader along, or else they get bored, and I get bored writing it. I just try and balance between we need to have things going on, and we also need to have, a relationship between these two main characters. And I have a lot of side characters that decide that they want to take over, and that is fun too. So a lot of times they'll get their own book. They'll be the next couple in the next book,
Do you have any habits or rituals that help you stay focused?
I try not to restrain myself too much because I'm the kind of personality that if I have too much obligation or too many things like that, I start to rebel against it and I don't want to do it. But with writing, I have to be in a room by myself. I cannot be in a cafe or anything like that. And I put my little earbuds in and I have the cat with me almost always. She just settles between my legs and and I try and write in like a 90-minute burst because I find after that, and I write sitting up in bed, so I find after that, my butt starts to fall asleep and I need to get up and stretch, so I'll do that. And I did read a really good book about work habits called Deep Work. I think it's by Cal Newport, and I took a lot from that because it's very hard not to be distracted as you're writing. So I put the phone away from me, it's out of the room, and I just try and focus for a while. But I also try and there's just some days where I'm not feeling it, and I don't want to force it because I feel like it comes across as stiff then. So I allow myself to just go with the flow too.
So I do have a question about Spicy Little Curses. What
Okay.
was the is inspiration for that? Because out of those Montlake ones, like we loved Spicy Little Curses. Like the way that you created the story and all the like elements of it, just the whole tattoo aspect, like that was wild. And I, but what, like, where did you get the inspiration for that story?
Well, about a year prior, I was going to be involved with Dark Star Romance, which is an audiobook production company. It was putting on a in New Orleans, they were going to put on an audiobook convention. And part of that was I was partnering with them to write a little novella that they were going to produce and, act live at the convention. Well, the convention didn't end up happening, but I had a couple of sketched ideas and I wanted it to be set in New Orleans and there was going to be some paranormal aspect. And a lot of my heroes have tattoos. So I was like, okay, I want to work that into it. And because I had been working on Blackthorn, I had these ideas about, the supernatural and witchcraft of things already floating around in my head. And so I kind of just, put all that together. And it was a really fun and easy, quick story to write for me. I think it only took like a week to write that short story.
Oh,
So
really? 'Cause
yeah, it's a lot of fun.
it's so well done. Like the depth of like the characters, like I listened to it, like I didn't eyeball it, and but so it was like a really quick listen, and I speed everything up too, so it was like super quick. But it just there was something about those characters in that book, and like the way that like the tattoos were like an element of their own, which if you read the book, know exactly what I'm talking about. But it just I just really, really love Dax.
Yeah, he was a fun character, and I tend to like heroes who have secrets. And then the heroine who is, sassy and whatever and is trying to dig beneath his exterior to get to those secrets, that creates a juicy tension. But it's kind of difficult in a short story format to develop a romance in I don't know, 60 pages or something and have a compelling short story there. So I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it.
No, you like there are some authors who like I hate to say it, but novellas are not like their forte, but you like managed to get all of the right like flow and points, and there's just something about it. There's I could listen to it over and over again. I just
Oh,
loved
thank
it so
you. And
much.
I think that particular book has a lot of potential to actually be expanded into a lot of other things.
Well, just that world itself.
Yeah, so that's in the back of my mind. And so in that novella, Petra, the main female character, is distantly related to somebody in Blackthorn. So a lot of times I will do this with my books. There's overlapping relationships and things. So at some point in the future, I'll be able to bring everybody in, and either kill them off or, have them have another
Oh.
situation. So I like to tie things in to my
Well, that's
old paper.
intriguing. I do like that. So you've written quite a few stories now. Do you have a favorite hero that you have written?
I have a soft spot in my heart for AJ, who is the drummer in the Bad Habit series. I really like him a lot. He has a hard background, and I do that with a lot of my characters. They have some terrible backgrounds because it gives you a lot of character to work with. And then Declan, I think, from the Queens and Monsters series, Carnal Urges Book Two. He's an Irish mobster, and he's also one of my favorites. But it's funny, when I write a book, after I'm done with it, most of the time, the whole story and all the characters are just like sort of pushed aside, and I focus on the new thing. And I'll have readers say to me, "Oh, I love when so and so did this," and I'm like, "Did
Oh,
they? I don't even
did
remember."
you like
So,
that? Thank you.
yeah.
What about a heroine? Do you have a favorite heroine?
I do like Sloane from the Carnal Urges too. She's just kind of a badass, and also has been through hell, but is still re retains her kindness and sense of humor. So yeah, I like Sloane a lot.
In your writing, you have a tendency to go a little darker. Like, why?
I find it compelling. When I read, I have done some romantic comedies and what have you, but the older I get and the more things that I experience in my life, I just find that it's a little bit more true. Things aren't always, unicorns and rainbows. And so I've had a lot of, I don't want to say trauma, but I've had a lot of people close to me that have died, and I think maybe for an artist or a writer, it's a way to process some of that. So it tends to just come out in my work.
Well, and that's the thing, like art itself is a very emotional field. Like emotion, color, like I mean, I painted a lot in college. I was an art major in college, and like so it was like the coloring that you chose, like why did you pick that color? Why is it so bright? Why is it so dark and deep? Like I think that's one thing about writing too. There's such an artistry to it and the way that stories are crafted.
And I'm drawn to that because it's very compelling, these situations and how these characters deal with them. And I think if I'm doing it correctly, the reader will have more of an emotional, visceral response. And that's kind of what I want. I want people to have an emotional response to my work so that they feel connected to it in some way, even if, obviously, a mafia don is not going to be reading this book, but for the people who read it, they can see the humanity there, and they can see maybe something that they recognize and they like. And also, writing is just such a, or reading too, it's such a way to escape. It's entertainment, but it's also escape. But sometimes, these characters will just reach out and touch you. And some, like I said, some of my characters do have terrible backstories, so I have to kind of delve into that and expose that a little bit. But then the next book I might be like, okay, I'm feeling happier this week. We're going to start writing a romantic
Well,
comedy. It's always changing.
and that's the thing about like being an author and writing like what you want. Like you can go any direction.
As long as you trust yourself, sometimes I will read a book and I will get the sense that the author was either trying to, it was like they're writing for the trope, for the marketing of the book, which is actually a legitimate way to write, because it is easier to market the book if you know what it's going to be about in advance. But for me, it's a little bit soulless. Like I want my work to be a little bit, on a deeper level than just thinking about what the marketing is going to be. I worry about the marketing afterwards. And maybe that's why I'm not exactly a niche. When I first started out in publishing, my publisher was like, okay, you've been writing paranormal, and I wanted to do contemporary. And they're like, we want you to stay over here because it's much more difficult, for a publisher. And so I went off on my own and did my indie books for a long time, and which was great because I could just do my own thing. But now I'm back with a publisher, so
Well,
it's all good.
and that's one thing we've talked about on the podcast a lot recently, and like even in the past like year and a half, how there's so many books that are based on vibes. It's like we don't want vibes, we want depth, we want meat, we want like a story you can really dig your teeth into.
Or you see a lot of copycats with like, okay, if there's so many hockey romances now because it got so popular. And I understand the desire to do that because as an author, you want to be successful. I understand that, but I'm trying to create a career that's long term where I can look back at this body of work that I have and be proud of my choices because I did them for reasons other than just trying to make a buck. But
Well, it's funny because Becky and I were just having that conversation today. Like we were talking about like how like somebody started like the hockey romance, like and then people build on that. And it's like, and you can write a hockey romance, but how are you keeping it fresh? Like how are you taking this idea and creating it your own and doing your own thing with it? And it's just because how many people are writing books and publishing? And there's like so many options, and there's some really, really amazing authors out there, and then there's some okay authors, but they put themselves out there too.
And I have respect for anybody who is trying to do something artistically and put themselves out there because it is it's terrifying. And you're doing this work and you don't know. I mean, and you will get criticized. It's just part of it. You will have haters and you will have people say nasty things. And at the beginning of a career,
It's
it can
hard.
be soul destroying. I mean, I've seen some writers who just can't handle it, the criticism and the online pile-ons. And I stay out of all of that because I don't want that in my head, all of that stuff. But yeah, I really try and bring something new to the table because I want my books to be fresh and I want readers to remember it because, so many of these things can be cookie cutter if you're not trying to say something different. And I want to have something to say that's different.
So let's talk Blackthorn. It came out November 4th, 2025. It's small town secrets revenge. She's a single mom. She is coming home after a long time away. And when like in all the PR stuff that you're marketing as Practical Magic meets Hemlock Grove. And if nobody knows what Hemlock Grove is, it's this like bonkers Netflix show that came out a few years ago with Bill Skarsgård.
Oh, I love that
I
guy.
love all the Skarsgårds, to be
Yeah,
honest. I
too.
love them
They're an
all.
interesting clan.
They are. And I mean, clan is a really good word for them too. But it's that's a like I did not end up finishing the series because like it hit the point in like where I was like in my life. I was like, I cannot finish this, but it's bonkers and it kind of really is a great description.
I have to watch that because I haven't. The
Oh,
only
you
things
haven't seen it?
No, and I didn't even know that was part of the marketing. I always knew Practical Magic was in there, but it's always been paired with something else like, Frankenstein or whatever, because there is all these gothic psychological horror elements that are in addition to the family elements and the small town and the romance. So it's a little bit of a genre bender,
A
and
little bit.
I appreciate that my publisher was all in for it because I could have turned this thing in and they would have been like, this is cuckoo. But yeah, my editor actually wanted it even darker than what I had originally written. So
Oh,
I'm like, okay,
really?
I'm going cuckoo for it. And so when I first told my husband, like, what one of these scenes at the I won't say what it is because it's a spoiler for any listeners, but
One of the end ones,
one
like.
of the end ones where, the ashen fire demon
Oh,
is
I know
there.
exactly which one you're talking about
And I
then.
told my husband about it. He just stops and he looks at me and he goes, "What is wrong with you?" And was like, "I don't know. I just thought it would be a little fun, right?" So I put
I
it
mean, now I will say I mean I got the early arc, but then I got the early like list audiobook as well. And like when I was eyeballing, like it I wasn't loving the first It was like, because there's just a lot of intro into the world and things like that. But then I've got like when that audiobook hit my ears, I was like, oh, now this is like how it's gonna work. Like the audio narrators that were chosen fit these characters so perfectly, and the way that like they both bring these characters to life, like I could not like stop listening.
Well, Tara Langella is I'm just going to say it. She's my favorite female audiobook narrator. I think she's a genius actor and she's brilliant. And I've worked with her on a lot of different projects, and she will read the whole book first and get an idea of who this character is, and then she starts to voice them. And she has a theater background. And
Oh,
she
well,
also
that
does
makes a
a
lot
lot
of
of,
sense then.
yeah, and she also, and she's very well educated. I just love her. She's very bright, and she does a lot of gaming voiceovers too, where she gets to be these, crazy alien characters and all that stuff. She just has a very broad range. And Conor Kreis has a certain, there's something about his voice that when I listen to it, I'm like, this is perfect. This is because there's something else going on just besides the hot, sexy guys. Like, there's a darkness there that I really like. And Veronica Pace, we've worked together too before, and I wanted someone's voice who was very different from Tara's to play the daughter. So, and it's, audio book actors are, well, they're actors. These narrators are very talented individuals, and they can totally make or break a listening experience. So I'm very careful with the people that I choose, and so I think they did an amazing job. I love
No.
the
I
audiobook.
will say, like, I have listened to Connor. I love Connor. Like, he will like narrates it. I will listen to it. But I had not listened to either one of the other narrators part like previous to this. But they, the way that they created these characters in this like audio version, like it brought a whole new level to the book.
It does. And I almost wish people would listen to the audiobook. Just listen to the audiobook because
Well,
it's
that's the
so
thing.
good.
I will be telling people, like, you do not need to eyeball this one. You just need to listen to it.
I almost agree. I mean, I'm kind of just like, yeah, don't bother with, any of this other stuff. Although some people, they like to have their own imagination going on. But the great thing about audiobooks is, you can have this going while you're doing your chores or you're driving to work or whatever it is, where you wouldn't otherwise be able to read a book. So that's one of the reasons things I love so much about audiobooks is that you can bring it, anywhere with you in life, and it's just an excellent way to get more out of a novel than you may otherwise not have if the narrators are good. Because I have had early in my career, I have had a few books where I was just like, I cannot listen to it because the accent is wrong or the pacing is wrong or the acting or what have you. So
Yeah, sometimes it's just the cadence of the voice. You're like, oh man, I cannot, like, even speeding it up, it does not
it
work.
doesn't work. Or just the quality of the voice or the acting. Everybody does their own thing. But yeah, Blackthorne, these narrators did an incredible job.
So Maven is our main character. She is coming home. Her grandmother has passed away. And it's been 12 years. And when we meet her, we find that she kind of ran away at the time. Like, she wanted out of the town. She wanted away from things that were happening. And things are a little sketchy, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. Like, when she comes back, like, things are not as everybody seemed, and the bad isn't necessarily bad, but also not good at the same time. So there's so many different, like, intricate, like, pieces to this story where good is not good, but bad is not bad. And
You don't know exactly what you're seeing. You're not really sure who's a good person and who can't be trusted and who isn't, because I love unreliable narrators and I love to create a mystery where, because then the reader gets invested. When they get a clue that things are not what they seem, and this idyllic small town is not really an idyllic small town. And then so Maven, I think she is a relatable character in that she's a mom and she's a single mom, and a lot of women know what that experience is like. And we all have family drama, and so she's going back for this funeral, which is in and of itself, a dramatic situation, and then to find that her grandmother's body has vanished. Okay, well, that's a whole situation. But also the background of the family and this generational weight that they have on the family of being outcasts and you know, their others, that all gets into play too. So it was really fun because it is a gothic environment and atmosphere to throw all that against the wall and like, okay, let's see what we can play with here and make it really, you know, the house is kind of spooky and they've got this caretaker. It's like, okay, is he a zombie? The daughter thinks he's a zombie. You know, it's got all these interesting characters to play
Well,
with.
there's so many eccentricities with all of the characters that it, and that's the one thing that I really liked about the story is like you don't really know who anybody is until the end of the book. 'Cause even Maven, like there's like you kind of get an idea of who she is, but then the story kind of spins us. And it's like she is a little bit different than you anticipated going into it.
Right. Well, I like to make characters that are, you know, they're three-dimensional. And then even at the ending is ambiguous. And so I leave it for the reader to decide what the truth was. And so some readers love that, and other readers get really frustrated because they want you to tell them exactly what's happening. It's like, well, I'm going to throw in a twist here and see what you think of the twist. And then afterwards, we can all discuss it and you can send me hate mail. You know? But that was intentional.
Well, and I think with a story like this, where there is that element, which I'm being super vague because this is one of those things that I don't want to give anything away, but like I think that with this story, like there's such a vagueness to the town itself that like nobody really knows exactly what's happening. It's like we learn some parts, but some parts we like it's still like nobody truly knows what happened. And I think that's the key is nobody actually does know.
And so you're viewing things through a certain lens, and then the camera shifts and it goes in a different direction, and then you're like, oh, wait a minute. But yeah, the town itself is a character also in the book. And the season and the atmosphere of, you know, being set around Halloween and all those things, all of it adds up to the gothic atmosphere of the story. So yeah, it was an interesting book to write. I had a lot of fun with it. I had a lot of fun with Ronan, the male character, because you really don't know what his story is either at the beginning. And then, you know, you go through all of these things that what's happening in the house. And at the end, by the end, I think people are either convinced one way or another. We have a I made a Blackthorn decompression group on Facebook because a lot of times my readers want to go in and yell at each other about what they think really happened. So they're doing that in there now.
Well, it's funny because in my notes I have Ronan. He's quite an enigma until almost the end. And then, but even at the end, like we really like we know, but we don't know. Because it's like, is it a figment of imagination? Is it something that happened? Like it just, it's one of those things where it's so, it could be this, but it could be that type of thing.
And sometimes, you know, people will go back and read another time to see what did I miss. And this happened a lot with my book Pen Pal, where it was like, wait, what? When the twist came, then you had to go back and read through, and everything seemed a little bit different on a second read because of what you now knew. And that's really fun to me. I like to give readers experiences that they can talk about afterwards, because a lot of books are just forgettable, and that's never what I want it to be.
Well, and Blackthorn Manor in itself is a character, and just like the way that the house like encompasses a lot of the way the story plays out.
Yeah. My editor actually really wanted me to have that The Haunting of Hill House vibe, where it was, you know, the house itself is a character and things are happening in the house, and it all adds a layer of psychological tension to what the character is going through. So
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
the house is definitely,
I can
and the
see
fact that
that.
it's been around for a long time, generations and generations, and different, you know, add-ons and building. This is not a new building, so it's got its own heartbeat and its own soul.
Well, and then we have the ants who are these free-spirited, for the lack of a better term, like
They're strong women, yes.
strong women who do their own thing. Like they scoff at like the way the town looks at them because they're going to live their lives the way they do, and they almost look down on Maven for like some of the choices that she made.
Yes. And that's another part of family dynamics. right?
Yeah.
A realistic part of family dynamics. But these particular women have been outcasts and others for so long that they, I think, all of them have embraced it. Where Maven, also because of other things that happened during the story,
Yeah.
she couldn't take it. She couldn't handle it. She didn't want to live as the outcast. She felt she just wanted to disappear and get away from that. So for
Yeah.
her to have to come back to this setting where the whole town has always, been afraid of them and or hated them, is a lot of psychological weight for her to deal with. So she's
Well,
dealing with a lot.
I feel like there's some psychological warfare, like for her just coming back too.
Well, and then you get into what happened with her and
Ronan.
Ronan, and then you have a class difference too, because
Yeah.
Ronan and his family are very wealthy, and the Blackthorns are not, and so you have all that kind of forbidden, passion, and then all the dumb stuff you do when you're teenagers that you wouldn't necessarily do when you're 10 years older.
Right.
Yeah, and all that, all their cluttered backstory comes back to play.
Cluttered is a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
And Ronan himself, like he has his own hang-ups. He has a very disjointed relationship with his father, but he has a little brother that like he really cares for, but there's elements in like their family dynamic that like you allude to things happening, but we don't really get a lot until like closer to the end. And it's like there's like so much closed off. Like, so everybody's so closed off. Like, and I will say, like, as Maven and Ronan like do start to like rebuild and reform, like they do start to open up a little bit, but it's still within measure.
Yeah, there's a lot of distrust there because you have so much baggage. And a lot of times when you are hurt when you're young, you don't really let it go. You think you've moved on, but that scar is still there. And then you go back and see the person who hurt you, and the wound just reopens all over again. But Ronan and his father, I liked dealing with that relationship too, because you got to see Ronan's sort of distaste for just people who love money. And the relationship with the stepmother, where he just really looks down on her because she's very materialistic. So you get to see a side of him where he's not just a rich guy who, wants to show off his watch collection and what have you, where some of these billionaires, in other stories are kind of like that. They're superficial. But then you start to find out there's some strangeness in his family line, and the background of what's going on with his family, and maybe there's other reasons why the father is the way that he is,
Right.
and of course there's a link there to Maven's mother with Ronan's father. So there's this family tree is very entangled between the two of them. So it was
Yeah.
fun.
Well, and with Ronan too, like he's so closed off, like I said, but him and Maven, like their relationship was not smooth and easy. Like there was a lot of anger, a lot of meanness, like from both sides, really. And so like what they experienced individually, but together was vastly different, even though they're experiencing a lot of the same things together.
Yeah, and I wanted, so I use a lot of times banter, and the words will be light, and there's barbs and everything, but there's so much going on underneath that. And so I wanted to explore with them, okay, how are we going to get them back to a point with all these things that have happened, not just between them, but between the prejudice of the town and between their two families? There's a lot of, outside drama, and Maven is trying to protect her daughter. So she's got even more of an impetus to keep an arm's length away from him. But that's part of the juicy tension of the relationship building, is the back and the forth and the emotions fighting with what you think you should be really doing.
Well, and Maven herself, like she's really trying to protect her heart again.
And ultimately you can't, especially in a romance,
No.
you can't protect your heart. It's you can try as hard as you want, but
Well, and fate is like a big part of this, like fate and just being like where you're supposed to be type of thing.
I like to play with that that concept a lot in my books too, because there is a lot of romances. There is just sort of like, oh, it's light and it's whatever, and we're gonna live happily ever after. But a lot of the things that I do, it has there's ties to the past, and there's more depth to it, and it's like, maybe this person actually is the person that you're supposed to be with, but
Right.
boy, you're gonna have to fight to get there. So
So what is next?
I am working on a super secret project that I think everybody's going to lose their minds when I announce what it is.
Okay.
And I'm overthinking it. So I'm in the beginning of the process, and I'm overthinking it, and I have to keep remind myself of why I'm writing it in the first place. So that'll probably make sense after it's all been declared. But then I have another romance on deck that my publisher and I are doing a deal with now, and I'm not sure if that's going to be a standalone or not. But there's always stuff in the pipeline. Right now is probably the first time ever since I was published in 2012 that I don't have another pre-order up. So Blackthorn just came out this week, and I don't have any pre-orders up, but I'm working on projects. So
Are we going to be back in the Blackthorn world though? Because Colt, the PI, like you have some teas there.
I do. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people are clamoring for a sequel, but it's like, what the way I wrote it to be ambiguous. They're like, we want answers to that. Well, that was the point. There are
Yeah.
no answers. So I could, if I did, I would probably start a novel with Bea. She would probably be, the next heroine, and then we would get some situation with her, and we'd find out more about Ronan and Maven and that.
Well,
But
like, 'cause like the whole, yeah. Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah. So I could go from there and then just have some, chapters that included Ronan and Maven. But I don't know. I never say never, because sometimes I will be like, okay, that's one and done, and then an idea will come to me and I'll just start writing it, and I'll have to be like, well, there's another one.
Well, I look forward to whatever comes next. But thank you so much for joining me for this author spotlight. It has been a joy to chat.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me. It has been fun.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.